The great, unsurpassed, and penetrating truth is seldom met with, even in the 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So, Happy New Year. Thank you all for the opportunity to spend a little time with you, talking about probably what is a monk's favorite topic, Dharma. When I was a young monk training in the monastery when Rev. Master Ji was alive, this was an especially special day because not only was it the first day of the year in the festival of Maitreya, but it was also her birthday. So we had special calls to celebrate. I can remember her saying, I can remember the last time she came. She was in a wheelchair, kind of sitting over there. And she told us later how important it was for this particular ceremony to be both bright and warm, okay? Because that's the quality of Maitreya, okay? Kindness, warmth, brightness. Rev. Master, you know, never did look at life through rose-tinted glasses. She was always very straightforward that this is samsara. This is the world of suffering. But she also didn't look down on life. She saw this as our opportunity to train, what I think in Tibetan Buddhism they call the precious human birth. We have the Dharma, and that's something to be incredibly grateful for. And one of the offerings she made to us is throughout the year we have these, you know, various ceremonies that kind of punctuate the year. Sometimes it's the event in the life of the Buddha. Sometimes it's a great bodhisattva that we're reflecting on. Sometimes it's remembering one of our ancestral masters. It's an opportunity to stop, reflect, you know, be grateful, and offer merit, and just recommit ourselves to the practice. And it's right back into everyday life. It really, ideally, the shift from ceremonial to everyday life should be seamless. Okay. So, what I want to talk about today is ceremonial. It's one of my favorite topics. I want to offer you something a little different. It's a different way of looking at ceremonial, a different lens through which to look at it. It's based on some research I did 35 years ago when I was in college. I was quite interested in how, you know, philosophy or how truth could be expressed through art, literature. It was part of my religious search, although I didn't realize it at the time. Okay, but it was a step in the process. It's a theory from aesthetics, the area of philosophy that deals with beauty. In using this as a theory, I want to emphasize that it's a theory. Okay? And a theory is only as useful as long as it works. Okay, so if it doesn't work for you, fine, just leave it be. It's also an old theory. This is the view of she was a female philosopher back in the 40s and 50s. So again, this is 50 years old. It, you know, there's been a lot of water under the bridge since then, and may not be a good theory anymore, but it works for what I want to present. Another thing that's important about theory is that we also don't hang on to it. The theory is like, you know, the jewel tree and the ornaments are placed on it, the jewels, the fruit, which represent the Dharma. Okay. When we enjoy the Dharma, and then it, you know, in a few weeks here, we'll take the trees down. Another analogy might be, and more closer, it's like beans in your garden. You know, you build up a pole and fence and so forth, and the beans grow up. They wind around the strings, and you know, they eventually, you know, produce beans. You eat them. You get the nutrition from them, and then, since the plant dies, you take the whole business apart. Okay, so the important thing is the nutrition we get from the beans, not the wonderful trellis that we build. Okay? The other thing about what I want to present to you today is that this is the doorway in. Okay? It's only a door. The important thing is to go through the door and do ceremonial for its own sake. One of my fellow monks who read this, read an earlier version of this comment, he said, well, I don't know about using, you know, a theory from philosophy. You know, it could give the impression that, you know, religion was derivative, you know, that somehow we needed philosophy to explain what we were doing. And he was right. We see a lot of that going on nowadays with science and psychology. Those are two fields that are often used to try to explain what we're doing when we sit in meditation or what we practice. But I think it's useful sometimes to have a door. And some of you may find this door helpful. And but ultimately, we don't want to get stuck in the door, you know, admiring it. We want to go through the door, get into the room, you know, and do the ceremony. We actually don't have a good verb for what we do as ceremony. Celebrate the ceremony, do the ceremony. We don't have a good verb for that yet. You know, religion, spirituality, our practice, it doesn't depend upon anything else to explain it. But explanations can be useful. Reverend Master Jiu, one of the monks said, I didn't hear her say this, but she was quoted as saying that ceremonial is a complete waste of time. Okay? what she meant by that, it was in the same spirit of Sawat Sawaki Koto, the old master who certified her Kensho, said that, you know, would say that Zazen is useless, you know, or good for nothing. And the point is that we do it without trying to get anything. Okay, just as when we sit, we try not to get into the gaining mind of trying to acquire something because we already have it. Okay, and so likewise, when we come to ceremonial, we celebrate. You know, we're not trying to get something else, but just do it for its own sake and for its own value and what it means to us. Okay. The woman I'm going to be quoting from a little bit, her name was Susanna Langer. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce her name. It's a German name, but she was an American. In many ways, it's interesting. She was like Reverend Master Jiu in that she was sort of the lone wolf in her field. How many women philosophers do you know? It's pretty rare. She was also a musician. She played cello, piano, and she brings to her theory music and an explanation based on music. Her first book was Philosophy in a New Key, which in itself is sort of a pun because we have keys in music, you know, that we sing according to. So she was trying to present something in a different key. She had part of her theory was that just as we use logic and symbols to talk about things, discursive thought, if you will, okay, concepts. Her thesis was that art can express things that are true as well, but it uses non-discursive symbolism, okay, what she called presentational symbols. And they're based on acts that we do as human beings in the form of play. All right? And each art, you know, develops out from a specific area of human experience, because that's what art's trying to do, is tell us something about what it means to be human. Okay. An example was that painting, or at least sculpture, arises out of truths about form, you know, visual form. Music arises out of truth about time. Okay, and her theory was that dance arises out of truths about power, okay, power with a capital P. And part of her thesis was that the content has to match the form, okay? If you're going to talk about, say, compassion, the form in which you talk about it has to be compassionate. Okay. Her second book was called Feeling and Form, and she was trying to match up how the form has to match the feeling, and the feeling has to match the form. Okay. And when it matches, we have a sense of, this is pretty, this is beautiful, this is good. That's where the philosophy kind of comes into it. We feel intuitively, yeah, that says it right. That says it's good. I can feel that. That's what the art, I can feel what the artist is trying to get across to me in this. Now, she bases her theory on a view of primitive human beings. And again, this view may be outdated. Anthropologists might question what I'm about to say and what she said. Her view was that primitive cultures, danced about a fire. Okay, and part of that dance was included communal chanting, and it included imitations of the natural world, of power that they saw, lightning, thunder, animals, water, fire, all these different powers. And so they imitated them in the dance, the forces of energy. And they did them together. It was communal. And it was a way of transcending the self, okay? Because you'd end up in some form of ecstasy, okay, bliss. And in that way, dance originally had a spiritual purpose or content. Now, she holds that the arts became secularized with, the scientific revolution and technological development and all that, and that dance became split off from its original foundations. It got split off from the religious meaning that was there, and it got cut off from being a communal practice and became something that people watched or spectators at. And the communal part, she felt, was relegated to like folk dance, because they're still kind of communal dances in folk dancing. So anyway, I was working on this 35 years ago, and I don't think I ever thought it again after I graduated from college. I never finished the project. It's another story. But a few years ago, in just thinking about ceremonial and being at a prior, I'm often trying to find ways to teach people about ceremonial and how to appreciate it, how to enjoy it, how to look at it. It all of a sudden came to me that, our Soto Zen ceremonial retains that original purpose of dance. It's a very slow dance, okay, but it's a dance nonetheless, and it also retains the communal form of the original dance. It's also, we do it for a similar reason, in that we want to understand the power with a capital P, which for us is the unborn. It's what Dogen says about when he talks, he's got a chapter in the show again about spiritual powers. And he says, there's the six, powers that people usually think about, but the real spiritual power is to know the unborn. Okay, so our ceremonials become about being one with the unborn. Okay. And they do it in such a way that the movements themselves express what the unborn is like. Okay. And so by doing them, we become them. Okay? So, I'm just going to give you the abridged version this morning. Many of us were up late last night, and some of you have a long way to drive home. Also, a lot of the detail you probably already know. Those of you who've been practicing, with us for a while, and I don't want to insult your intelligence. Okay. So I'm going to hit the high points, and let you fill in the details yourselves. And, you know, if you're interested in knowing any of the details or the thing, you can write me and I can email you a copy of the complete talk. It's written as if someone didn't know anything about ceremonial, and you folks do, so adapting it here. And I hope what I present is, again, kind of about the lens, you know, the different way of, you know, to looking at ceremonial. When we look at ceremonial, for the purposes of talking about it, I'm going to use, again, kind of something from music. I'm going to talk about there's different themes that are woven in and woven in together. Okay? And the different themes contain the gestures or movements that make up a dance. Okay. A short quote from Susanna Langer. She says, in a chapter on the roots of sacrament, okay, of ceremonial, she says, a ceremony cannot be recognized through any clearer medium than that of formalized gesture. Okay, what are we doing when we make gassho? It's a formalized gesture. You know, when we sit with our hands in the mudra of meditation, what is that? What's a formalized gesture? Okay, and there's a number of others that, you know, we'll touch on. She says, you know, it is cryptic, but it is recognized and yields a strong sense of tribal or congregational unity, a community of rightness and security. A rite or ceremony regularly performed is the constant reiteration of sentiments, of feelings, of truths about experience, towards first and last things. It is not a free expression of emotions, but a disciplined rehearsal of right attitudes. And that could almost be, I'm going to reword that in our terminology, and I think it can really point to the heart of what I have to say. You know, ceremony, when we do it often, we do it regularly, and we use these same forms again and again, okay, the gestures. And they're forms that point us toward first and last things. That's the important thing. Okay? This is what's most important in our training, is the important thing. And these gestures and forms point us to that. It is not a free expression of emotions. Okay, I think we all know that when we do ceremony, our ceremonies aren't about emotion. There's a joy, but it's not if you want to say it's spiritual feeling or religious feeling rather than just emotional feeling. And that it's as she called it, a disciplined rehearsal of right attitudes. I would say, well, it's actually not a rehearsal at all, because it's a value in itself. And when she says right attitudes, it's interesting that she says that, because right attitude is one of the another translation for the first of the Eightfold Path, which is right understanding, or right faith, right purpose. Okay, so in our own way, I feel, if we look at this through our eyes, she's saying, this is what ceremonial is about. Okay? Now, in talking about it, there's, as I said, I'm going to talk about it in two sets of gestures and movements. And these are ones that we all know. And one of them is stillness, and the other one is activity. Okay? They're the basic components of our meditation. We have a serene reflection. The serenity is the stillness, and the reflection is the activity. Okay, the stillness is helping our mind be like a mirror, and the reflection part, there's actually an intention there. Now, sometimes what we do is called silent illumination. It involves something, okay? And so we can call it the activity that's going on, okay? So we've got stillness and activity, and how these combine describe different ways of different kinds of ceremonial, okay? Um, This is reflected in Dogen's little adage about in our tradition we have just sitting and we have wonderful practice. Right? So stillness and activity. Now, with those two things, then there are what I'm going to call four movements. Okay. The first movement is stillness within stillness. Okay. And this is talking about when we sit in meditation. We may not think about it this way, but actually when we sit in meditation, we're conducting a ceremony. Okay. We take up a strictly, if you look at it in a meditation hall where everyone has a seat, okay. We're all sitting in a specific place. We take up a specific form. We do something specifically with our hands. We do the mudra, the meditation mudra. There's a beginning and there's an end. And the middle part is, if you will, the activity of no activity. Okay, it's stillness. So it's stillness within stillness. What we do is actually, well, at least in Catholicism, as I understand it, what we do is contemplative prayer. Okay. And it's our primary form of worship. If you think about it, when we come, to the temple, we're coming to church. Okay, what's the main thing we do when we come here? We sit. Okay. Koho Zenji calls it a religious exercise in Soto Zen. We can dispense with the ceremony hall, but we can't dispense with the meditation hall. Okay. The meditation is fundamental. It's foundational. Okay. And everything else kind of builds on that. All right? Okay. And then the second movement there is it's activity within stillness. And the activity in stillness is the bright mind with which we work on in meditation. Okay, we keep bringing our mind back. We're reflecting the Buddha nature. We're not just sitting there passively. There's an activity going on inside. That movement within stillness, is our breath, what we do with our breath. It's also what we call the cleansing of the heart. Okay. There's movement going on. It may not appear that way from the outside, but there's definitely movement going on. Now, some of our ceremonies emphasize activity and stillness, this particular, movement, in the fact that they're done while we're seated in meditation. Okay. Morning office, our first ceremony of the morning, we're seated. Okay. Midday service is usually done that way. Evening office, Vespers, is usually done that way. So you could say these are interior prayers or services, if I can put it that way. So the theme, the movement is activity within stillness. Okay? Another one is walking meditation. Okay, we're moving, but it's the stillness is at the center in what's motivating the moving. Okay? Then we're going to shift to activity. And there's two movements within that. The first is stillness in activity. And this is what people would normally call ceremonial. We gather together in the ceremony hall, the Buddha hall. We take up a specific place. And what are the fundamental gestures or building blocks of a ceremony? What are the various actions that make up a ceremony? A few of them are, making offerings, like we did this morning. We all came up and offered incense. There's bowing. There's chanting. There's procession, circumambulation. There might be others, but those are the ones that, to my mind, come out the most obvious. In offerings, the principle is gratitude. The different kinds of offerings that we make. And the form of the offering, we try to match the feeling that goes with it. For instance, like when we offer incense, the incense represents our bodies. Okay, stuff. All right. I don't know if you, though some of you, when I was growing up, we had, when we were lighting firecrackers, we had punks, you know, which was a lit stick with which you lit the firecracker, so you didn't, you know, weren't upright up next to it. And essentially, that's very much like what incense is, because originally incense, from what I understand, was made, you know, primarily from cow dung, okay, or ash, okay, and then there was a fragrance added to it. So in a sense, we're burning our bodies. We're putting, we're setting on fire our will to train, okay, when we offer the incense. Okay. You know, we have bowing. I think that's probably one of the most important gestures that we do. There's the gassho. There's bowing. There's simply following the celebrant, following the community. Then there's chanting. You know, pretty much I think all, you know, spiritual traditions do some kind of chanting. Seems to be something universal in that. I think that Reverend Helen talked with you a while back on ceremonial and probably specifically about chanting, so I don't want to go into that, you know, kind of tell you what you already know. But it's one of the things that's interesting about what we do, which again kind of supports, you know, this theory of ceremonial as dance, is that Reverend Master Jiyu picked out music or composed music that matches the inner activity that we're trying to cultivate. From what I understand, the modes, which is a kind of like the key, she wrote music in modes that promoted stillness, promoted brightness. Okay? So the chants that we do match the internal quality that we're trying to cultivate. So there's a unity there. There's no duality. Okay. Circumambulation, procession. Technically, we call this is called the eternal procession. Okay. The thing about our processions is that it's very much like the knot of eternity, which, you know, we've got one up there on the main altar and there's two on either side. And the quality of the knot of what's called the knot of eternity or knot of eternal love is that there's no beginning and no end. And so when we process in a ceremony, we're showing the quality of the unborn and the quality of the unborn's love. There's circles. The laity are doing a big circle on the outside and the monks are kind of going back and forth in the inside. But it's all, both are circles, okay, to show that the unborn's love is unending. And we're moving within it, and we're expressing it as we move. Okay. We learn by doing. By doing certain things, we learn things. Sometimes we learn with our bodies. This is an example of how we learn with our bodies. Okay, we're moving. We're expressing that going on beyond. Okay. It's always going on beyond. There's no beginning. There's no end. The graphs, or the activity that the monks are doing, represents the movement within the stillness, because we're moving in a different pattern, okay? But it's still there. And it's very much the same pattern that's in the Kechimyaku, the back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But it's all still one, one circle. Okay. And then the last theme is, or will it be activity within activity? And that's when we take our practice into daily life, and when we do what Kazan called the ceremony of daily life. This is something that Dogen emphasized. He didn't call it that per se, but that's what he was trying to, that's what he was emphasizing in his last 10 years of his training in Daihaji, up in the monastery, up in the mountains. He was working very closely with his disciples to actualize these different forms and to bring the spirit of meditation to everything that they did. If you look in the show Bugenzo, it ranges from everywhere to, you know, how to use the toilet, you know, to chanting the ancestral line. Everything becomes part of practice. Okay, there's nothing outside of practice. We can bring the spirit of gratitude and joy to everything that we do. Okay, there's no duality. And so, again, Kazon built on that and coined the phrase ceremony of daily life. But that's what we do. Just a few points on how to appreciate ceremonial. One is to remember that it's a living thing. It's a living participatory art. Okay, if it's an art, it's one of the performing arts. Okay, and we all play a part. It's active. We all do it. And like you know, theater, for instance, or formal dance, we create it and then it's gone. And the beauty is in the creation. Again, coming with the idea that it's how we do it. It's a thing in itself. Serves a purpose just in doing it. And in that sense, it's not, it's empty, if you will. Empty with a capital E. We're not trying to gain anything. We're not trying to do anything specific. We're just trying to express these truths about the unborn in a way that shows it, in an active way that when we sit in meditation, it doesn't always show. Okay, when we're sitting in meditation, we really can't see the movement. But when we do ceremonial, you can see the movements. Okay, and remember what the practice is about. I think it's important, you know, to have these kind of ideas. You can have them in the back of your mind, but you don't. They're concepts, and you don't do ceremonial thinking about all of these things. Okay, otherwise you've kind of lost the point, and you're probably going to bump into the person, you know, in front of you, or you know, turn the wrong way. What I've offered here, you know, there are some concepts for thinking about ceremonial. But when you come to do ceremonial, you try to just do it, to just do the chanting, to just do the bowing, you know, to just do the offering, do the walking. Okay, we bring the one mind to it. Okay, that we the mind of meditation. Okay. And again, as I said earlier, the form needs to match the teaching, you know, that's offered in it. You know, someone might ask, well, how do you see all this in ceremonial? I can remember what the answer I was given when I first came to the monastery. I said, well, don't worry about that. Just do it. You know, just by doing it, you will understand. And I think that's true. And sometimes it's helpful to have some concepts to think about what we do. And that's what I presented here today. I hope it might be of some use to someone. With ceremonial, we also bring what is called the naive mind of a child. Okay. This is the beginner's mind. We're not trying to figure it out ahead of time or as we do it, but we bring it as what's often called the willing suspension of disbelief. It's a term that's used in theater. The discriminative mind wants to make this into a concrete reality. But we have to suspend our disbelief. We have to let go of the critical mind that wants to see just the surface of things, okay, and experience things more with the heart, okay, the intuition. And that takes our willingness to do that. It takes our willingness to let go and experience that what we create here, we create a pure land. when we do a ceremonial. We're expressing what happens in a pure land. The disciples gather around the teacher. You know, they listen to the Dharma. They express their gratitude to the teacher. They make offerings. They bow. All of these things are going on. And they're going on not just externally, but they represent what's going on in our own hearts. You know, within our own hearts, we're willing to let go. Within our own hearts, we're bowing to that which is greater than we are. In our own hearts, we're making offerings. Within our hearts, we're moving. We're willing to follow. Okay. So again, the external thing we're doing is matching the internal thing that we're doing. And by doing the external thing, it builds on the inside. It imprints. We talk about training with body and mind, and sometimes we emphasize body, sometimes we emphasize mind. But because they're one, you know, they affect each other. So if you train with your body, it's going to affect the mind. If you train with the mind, it affects the body because it's one unit. Couple last things. I think it takes some effort and familiarity, some education or teaching to appreciate ceremonial. I think it's an art, if you will, somewhat like opera or abstract painting or existentialist drama. It helps to understand what the heck is going on. Okay. I think it's also true that ceremonial, like any kind of art, the teachers recommend that the best way to appreciate it is to surround yourself with it and do it. We learn by being immersed within it. In a way, somewhat like, what do they call it? Immersion camp for foreign languages. Okay, the best way to learn a foreign language is just go and be there in the midst of it. You pick it up pretty quickly. I think the same way is with ceremonial. We learn it, we appreciate it by doing it. Let's see here. Just to reiterate what I said in the beginning, what I presented here is a door. You know, if you find it a helpful door, use it. If you don't, find another door. Now use another door. Ceremonial is a form of meditation in and of itself. Okay. We don't need to justify it or explain it to some other discipline. It's something that our ancestors have pass on to us as an important part of our practice, serves a purpose. It's how to do the Dharma, if you will. Rather than reading about the Dharma, we're actually doing the Dharma. And again, by doing it with our bodies, it affects our minds. And I think the other important point is that what we do, the how needs to match the what. And I think our ceremonies do that because they're expressing truths about the power. Okay. P with a capital power with a capital P. But for us, it's the power of the unborn. You know, the power that comes, the strength, if you want to put it that way, of knowing the unborn and its existence. And so our ceremonies are fashioned in such a way that they express the truth through the movements themselves rather than just by the direct language, teaching in the language. close with a quote that of another monk who was talking about the same thing. When I first presented this at another temple, you know, the other monks, you know, commented on it, and well, the other monk said, "You could say that a ceremony is a way in which a whole bunch of people come together and do something that is completely selfless. There's nothing in it for any individual. There's nothing to get. And so it actually teaches the ability to let go. To let go of our personal agendas, to do something completely unselfish, and do something that benefits others without any reward for ourselves. Because every ceremony is an offering. And the offering which we make reflects the offering that's going on within our own hearts. It matches the offering that the unborn is actually always making to us. I can remember, it may have been Reverend Master Jesus said something about, or someone, I can't remember now, who said that, you know, even before we realized it, the unborn, the eternal, was longing for us. The eternal is knocking on our door. Sometimes I think the eternal is pounding on our door. Okay, but it longs for us. There's this Buddha nature within us that longs to know the and be complete and know the, if you will, kind of the cosmic Buddha, the Buddha nature, the greater Buddha nature. And so ceremonial helps to develop those attitudes, if you will. It helps to cultivate the qualities or the principles that both lead us to the unborn, but which also express the unborn. There's a moving toward, but also a coming back. All right. When we practice stillness, when we cultivate stillness, we're not only just cultivating our own stillness, but we're expressing the stillness of the unborn. When we cultivate compassion, it's just not our compassion. We're expressing the compassion of the unborn. And so it is with all the other qualities that we talk about. By practicing them, we become them. And that's, I think, the main thing about ceremony that I want to get across today, is that it's something that we do. It's something that we create together as a community. It's something that its form matches the teaching that we receive and that which we want to express. And what I said here is primarily a door. It's a doorway. Don't get stuck in the doorway. Go in. You know, go in. It's sort of like looking at, you know, ice cream. You know, the purpose of having ice cream is to eat it, not just to look at it. You can look at it for a long time. It may melt in the meantime, but it's to be enjoyed, you know, to enjoy and practice and do in and of itself without any other reason except this is good to do. This expresses our practice. This benefits other beings without any expectation of reward on our part. So, I think I'm going to leave it there. I know some of you have a long way to go. Or thank you for being here for the retreat, those of you who were here for the retreat, and everyone who came today for the ceremony and talk. And it's the beginning of a new year, an opportunity to make a fresh start. Every day is actually that, but at the beginning of the new year, we have that extra opportunity to remind ourselves, reflect on the past, and try to chart our course for the future. And I'll leave it there with just Happy New Year.